Every week on the Moth Podcast, we share stories that are funny, strange, heartbreaking, and above all, true.
I myself have been married for 56 years. Unfortunately, to four different women.
It turns out the people I was looking for all my life is what you people would call nerds.
Follow and listen to The Moth on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Everyone has an opinion. Let's hear yours. Call 888-808-1019. Powered by Paramount Plus. Stream every NFL on CBS playoff game. Live on Paramount Plus.
Good morning. Good morning. All right, let's get to it, man. Time is burning on me. And if you were listening before the break, once you get to 12, like, you got to take that break. There's spots, things that have to happen before we flip the calendar to the next day. I thought that I could get in Danny's call. We're going to go back to Danny. We were talking about the Giants, talking about their 2025 schedule, and starting to talk a little bit about the draft. So let's start that over. Danny in Paramus. What's up, man? You're on the Fan.
Thanks for getting back to me. So I was just saying that it might not be such a bad thing that the Giants have to pick at number three. Because their schedule is so disgusting next year, I think it's an automatic tank year. The league has decided that for us. Do you agree?
So I like, you know, the word tank right now, especially as we're talking about what happened with Tommy DeVito, especially as we're talking about this year, where beating the Colts, you know, not properly tanking again, put you in a position where you might miss out on the top two quarterbacks. I think it's a losing season. You're not going to have a winning record unless they have a miraculous draft and they spend some of that money and bring in some type of, maybe they, I don't know. Cause like when I look at the Commanders going from the number two overall pick to now playing in the NFC Championship, like you can make a big jump, but I just don't believe in the Giants coaches. I don't believe in their players. I don't believe in their organization to actually do that. Even if they do get Shedeur Sanders, I was listening to the drop from Boomer and Gio where Gio's talking about, you know, is anyone clamoring for Shedeur Sanders? Is anyone that you should be? You need a quarterback. You've needed a quarterback. And Shedeur Sanders he's an NFL quarterback. And he might not wow you or you might not be in love with the idea, but you shouldn't be in love with the idea of signing a Jameis Winston or, I don't know, a Cooper Rush. You need your own quarterback. That's the only thing left to do with Shane and Dable, complete the Holy Trinity and draft a young quarterback, and he's a star. Your star is in Philadelphia leading them to a potential Super Bowl, Saquon Barkley. You need another star.
Don't remind me, please.
I'm just saying, don't you need to replace me. A star with a star. That's why even if it's not Shedeur, then Travis Hunter, but mock drafts are coming out that are saying they'll be able to trade up with the Browns one spot this year to get Shedeur Sanders. I think everybody is expecting Cam Ward to go to the Titans.
But my issue is why would they trade capital to trade up when they could have just rested their starters against the Colts? if they wanted to trade, then why wouldn't they just go that route?
They tried to do it last year, right? Now the clip is being played on Instagram and Twitter of them asking Brian Dable, would you trade up for Jaden Daniels? And without a doubt, he said, yeah, I would. So here we are again. You're not picking six. You're picking three. The Cleveland Browns, they have a need at quarterback as well. But I have a feeling that Shedeur doesn't want to go to Ohio. Deion Sanders doesn't want his son going to them either. They'd be inclined to do the trade.
Right. Well, I'll leave you with this. This is the scenario that I think is going to happen. Okay, I think we get Travis Hunter at number three, who I think is going to be absolutely lethal. Okay, I think they're going to have a, like you said, a losing season, a brutal season. I think Shane and Dable are gone, and then we finally get new coach, new GM, and the number one pick the year after, and maybe fulfill the prophecy with Arch Manning. And then we have Travis Hunter and Malik Nabers, who I think can really be an offensive player of the year candidate at that point. Do you think that's realistic? And thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for the call, Danny. I don't want to say I think that's realistic. I think that's optimistic. I think you, as a Giants fan, have to hope and dream. first off, we don't know what Archie Manning is going to do. What I will say about next year, though, there's a few quarterbacks. Like, this is a lighter quarterback draft in the first round. By the time we get to next year, there's going to be like four or five guys that are being talked about as first round quarterbacks. But I don't think the Giants are in a position to kick the can down the road another year without drafting a quarterback high. And if Shedeur Sanders is available via trade, one pickup, you take him. If he falls to you, you take him. You take him because you don't have a quarterback. The Daniel Jones era is over. Tommy Cutlets will be around, but they're, you know, fool me once, fool me twice, fool me, can't fool me again. You can't do that again. Drew Lock will be long gone. I do like the scenario more so where they take Travis Hunter or even an Abdul Carter, like best player available, and then try to trade up from the second round, the 34th overall pick, back into the first round to get what other quarterback is falling. If it is a Jackson Dart, miss me with Jalen Milroe. He's not what you want to be. No, he's a project. He's not what you want to be signing up for. That'll like it has bust written all over it, mistake written all over it. Yeah, it's funny now. I was listening to C-Mac last night, and we're going to hear this conversation. And I literally was just on NFL.com reading the story, too, about, you know, Ohio State and them winning the championship and what this means for the NFL draft. And they're talking, like, you know, about Will Howard and Riley Leonard. No. No. You don't want to fall into, like, the Will Howard as your quarterback you're drafting up to get. To me, he's got J.J. McCarthy written all over it, right? J.J. McCarthy wins the national championship. He starts rising up the ranks and is like, what? J.J. McCarthy? They didn't even throw a ball. They didn't even want him to throw the ball. 888-808-1019. Walter is in South Hold on the Fan. What's up, Walter?
Hey, Keith. Last call kind of stole my thunder. I mean, I think the Giants are looking at 3 wins next year. But past that, has there ever been an athlete who cost himself more money than in one game than Sam Darnold?
Sure, sure. Pete Alonso might have cost himself some money. I was talking about this because I came on and I tried to defend Sam Darnold. Back-to-back games, he had a bad performance. Just terrible opportunity or terrible time to not seize the opportunity against the Lions, against the Rams. But what's going to benefit Sam Darnold is this light quarterback draft class and this super like basic free agency of quarterbacks. The quarterbacks we're looking at, like Trey Lance coming available. It's what's going to benefit Sam Darnold is he's going to be the top dog. And if Kirk Cousins at 35 can go get $100 million off of the Falcons, someone's going to pay Sam Darnold, and they're projecting him to get the same deal that Daniel Jones got, $40 million, $160 million total, $40 million a year.
I don't know. If I'm a GM,
You're a Giants fan. You need a quarterback. So. You paying Sam Darnold to come back to Jersey?
Well, you say one. I don't think there's a franchise quarterback in the draft. They're talking about Quinn Ewers being a number 3 guy. He's awful.
Yeah, he's got to go back to school. I don't know why he wouldn't go back to school and take the money.
Yeah, well, you say the Giants don't want to go through another year, but the Giants have gone through, I don't know, 15 years now. You know,
yeah, it's been a lot of single-digit win years in the last 10, 15 years. And that schedule just on paper is brutal. At home, like we talked about how they're flying planes this year at home. Well, guess what? At home, you can welcome in Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs. You can welcome in Justin Herbert and the Chargers. You can welcome in Jordan Love and the Packers, Brock Purdy and the 49ers, maybe J.J. McCarthy and the Vikings, if he's ready to go. And then obviously you have the NFC East where it's Jaden Daniels, it's Jalen Hurts, and Dak Prescott. Yeah.
Okay, well, that gets us to 0-11.
It just doesn't seem good.
The Lions, the Broncos, and even the Bears in away games. Yeah. I mean,
the Patriots will be better. We know that.
they may not be favored in any game. Even the three possibles are the Raiders, the Patriots, and the Saints. And I don't know if they'd be favored in any one of those games.
Not today. Not if we're thinking about it today. Thanks for the call, Walter. You know what's crazy? Going into this season, there were a lot of people in the NFL that ranked the Giants roster and the Giants team 30, 31, 32. And here we just poo-pooed it, laughed it off. No way, they're crazy. No, but they finished as a bottom three team. Could have been picking number one. People were right. When they looked at the Giants roster, they were like, this team is not going to win. They're not going to compete. Daniel Jones? Yeah, it's funny. You know, I don't think Sam Darnold cost himself that much money. Now, yes, you could write a story that Sam Darnold beats the Lions. They get the number one seed. And I don't know, it's the NFL. You know, maybe they host the Commanders and beat the Commanders or even whatever. As is, they go to Arizona and beat the Rams and go on to face the Eagles, and maybe he loses there, or maybe he beats the Eagles and he's in the NFC Championship. How much more money would he have made himself? It's a team game. And that was the whole thing when I came out to defend Sam Darnold. I'm like, the quarterback gets too much of the blame when they lose, but also too much of the credit when they win. What were we expecting Sam Darnold to be? Were we expecting Sam Darnold to play like Lamar Jackson, Josh Allen, Jaden Daniels? Jaden Daniels playing the best out of all the... We were expecting Sam Darnold to play like Jaden Daniels against the Lions. We were expecting him to play like Patrick Mahomes against the Rams. No, he's Sam Darnold. When everything is set up for him, when everything is perfect, when Justin Jefferson and Jordan Addison are running wide open and he's got protection, he's got time, he can throw the ball. I think he got exposed in those games as far as not being able to avoid the rush, which all of these quarterbacks have to be able to do. Also, he got exposed not being able to read the blitz and like get the protection set and get rid of the ball. I am so impressed with Jaden Daniels. Vic Fangio came out and said he's a rookie quarterback by birth certificate, not by the tape, because they're watching film on this kid. He's diagnosing the defense. Pre-snap read, he knows where he wants to go with the ball. He's getting rid of the ball. He's making big plays. As a rookie, he's just prepared. And all this stuff that came out about the VR, I don't know if you guys have peeped this, but you should. I didn't even know this existed. Jaden Daniels wakes up every morning and puts on a VR headset and starts studying film. He's training his brain at 1.75x speed. Like, you know how you can speed up the podcast? Like, he's watching the game faster than the game happens in real time. And there's a thread. It goes on to talk about, you know, his struggles at Arizona State. 10 interceptions. Confidence shattered. He lost both his grandparents to COVID. And he had to get out of there. It went downhill. The video that keeps popping up of his Arizona State teammates talking about, oh, he's trash anyway. Get him up out of here. Whatever. Then he transfers to LSU. Shows flashes of brilliance in Death Valley. Two German entrepreneurs changed everything. Verena Kao and Christian Hartman, they founded this whole VR company. It was originally built for soccer. Their business was struggling. They needed a breakthrough. They had no idea. There was this whole thread I was reading. I'm like, is this? I thought it was fake. But I was like, I'm like, this is insane. Like, this kid, he plays like a cheat code. His cheat code is that he has virtual reality simulating the game at a faster speed than the game, where he's prepared for every defense that he's going to see. So, Jaden Daniels, I don't know. I wasn't expecting Sam Darnold to play like Jaden Daniels, but he doesn't have to get the same deal that Daniel Jones got. 888-808-1019. It's funny when, you know, we talked about, like, Pete Alonso should have made his money at the end of his season. You want to talk about fumbling a bag? Pete Alonso fumbled like $80 million. And he played well at the end. Like, we're going to remember his last games as a Met very fondly. Like, He put the team on his back. He saved the day. He saved the season. He came alive after that. But yeah, he can't get paid. He's not going to make more money than Sam Darnold. I can guarantee you that. Zach is in Brooklyn. What's up, Zach? You're on the Fan.
Yes, and exactly what I want to talk about is Pete Alonso. I know he came up with those huge hits. He's been such an exciting homegrown Met, one of the most exciting homegrown Mets I've ever seen in all my decades watching. So I know a lot of people think, whatever, you know, he's asking for too much money, but I just feel like I'm pretty disappointed in Steve Cohen and David Stearns right now. I know we have Juan Soto, we should be happy, but my son, my 10-year-old son, he's been crying about this. You know, I mean, he's a kid, but I'm feeling it too. I mean, this guy means a lot to us, you know?
Yeah, and a 10-year-old kid, he started probably watching baseball, and Pete Alonso was the best player on the team five years ago, and it's like, that's his guy. He probably has Pete jerseys, player cards, stuff like that.
T-shirts, bobbleheads. Yeah, we've watched every home run derby. And, you know, I feel like it's okay. I thought Steve Cohen was the kind of owner who was a real fan who was going to have a little nostalgia, a little loyalty. In addition, obviously, I know winning is the priority, but I think we could have a little nostalgia, a little loyalty, bring the fans what we want. He's going to hit 35 to 40 home runs for at least a few more years. I think that seems pretty likely. He's durable. He's a great guy. I just, you know, Soto is an amazing player, but I don't have that emotional connection to him. I'm sure maybe it'll come, but right now, all we can, you know, this whole offseason, even with Soto, is going to feel like a big failure to me. I have to say, my son and I are going to feel like it's a big failure no matter what. We don't get Pete. You know, we'll go to our games, but it's not going to be, it's going to take us a while to really get into this new team.
The come down. It's the fall from the high you felt when you found out the Soto news, and the offseason started off winning the winter meetings, taking Juan Soto from the Yankees. I thought everybody was sure that Pete Alonso would come back. If you can give this guy $805 million over the next 15 years, you can certainly afford a five-year deal for Pete Alonso. But they've chosen
5 years, 120, 130. What's the big deal? What's he worried about?
They've chosen principle. They've chosen looking down the road and not betting against themselves, not paying Pete if the market isn't paying Pete. There's no other offer out there for Pete Alonso. So they get to set the market and end the market.
Yeah, and I don't feel bad for Pete, I'm saying, to be honest. I feel bad for us. You know, he's our guy. We enjoy watching him, whatever. He's got enough money. I'm not worried about him. I'm worried about New York Mets want to have a guy that's a lifelong Met, breaking all the home run records. And, you know, this is also entertainment. It's not only a business. It's sports. Yeah. It's entertainment. This guy is fun to watch.
Yeah, you want to see him end his career as a Met. It still could potentially happen. Thanks for the call, Zach. Breaks your heart to hear about the kids. I met this kid during the Subway Series. I had a Pete Alonso jersey on, 13-year-old kid that listened to my show. It made me think differently. I'm like, man, I'd be getting at some of these weirdo, nerd, loser Mets fans on air, but that's like a small percentage of them that I deal with online. I don't want Mets fans to think I'm talking to all of them, especially not these young guys. It's just the dweebs that live in the crevices of comments and Twitter replies. But the whole thing with Pete Alonso, yo, I was talking about it. Like, man, what about family? When you preach the importance of family, when you use the family word to mask the word money, when that becomes your filler word, when Boris tells Soto, hey, in this press conference, we don't say anything about the value of the contract. We don't say anything about the highest bidder. We don't say anything about the signing bonus and how much more money it was, that no matter what, you were going to the team that gave you the most. Juan, what do we say about Steve Cohen? Oh, family. Yeah, made everybody feel like family in my family, the Supreme Court of Soto. It's a family vibe and culture that they're starting here. And, you know, we're going to create dynasties and everybody's going to see it's a Mets town. And my family, we got our own family suite. And my mom's got a clothing allowance. And I get 4 premium tickets to the Clover Home Field Club for my extended family. And maybe if, Archangel or, you know, Bad Bunny want to pull up, I can put them in those seats. They're family too. They're family. And if you're a Met player who's been in the family, a homegrown Met, someone like, let's say, Jeff McNeil. There's an article in Newsday right now. Jeff McNeil says he's a little surprised Pete Alonso is still a free agent and hopes his good buddy re-signs with the Mets. It makes some of the players in the family start to question the family. I joked about the group chat because Steve Cohen had a players group chat. I would assume Pete Alonso would have to be in that. Can't just be Lindor, Marte, Edwin Diaz, Francisco Alvarez. I would assume Pete Alonso's in that group chat. Is he out of the group chat? Did he leave the group? They removed him? When you pitch this family vibe and culture that you're creating, and then you do wrong by somebody in your family, which I understand they didn't do them wrong. Let me rephrase that. When you don't extend and you don't go the distance for somebody that's been in the family, it kind of, you know, goes against what you're saying. 888-808-1019, it kind of makes guys feel some type of way. Hey, Pete is family. Pete has done a lot for this organization, this family. He doesn't want to go anywhere else. He said he wants to be a Met. He said he wants to be here. He's spoken time and time again about it. This is his free agency. This is his time for a payday. We know he went to get Scott Boras. We know he was going to always go to free agency. You guys knew it. We know he had a down year, but when we needed him the most, he came through. Does he not get a reward for that? 888-808-1019. No, because Stearns has his ideologies, his principles, his way of doing things, and I understand it as well. But I would also understand that the Los Angeles Dodgers added Kirby Yates, Tanner Scott, and Roky Sasaki in one weekend. And that is the team that ended your season last year. And if they're going to stack the deck like that, I got to extend now. Okay, I got to go against my ideologies, principles. I got to go against the limits that I set. Because that is a homegrown guy with a bat that we need in the playoffs, that we needed to survive these playoffs, and we need to go take care of him, to put him at first base, instead of trying to just move Mark Vientos from third to first and assume that that transition isn't going to screw him up in his second year when he's trying to have an encore, where he's trying to not have a sophomore slump. I know it would be more like a junior year, but you know what I'm saying. It would really be like a sophomore year if he's starting from the beginning of the season. I'd reconsider. I'd go back to the table and say, hey, listen, after seeing the Dodgers add Roky Sasaki to their rotation, Tanner Scott and Kirby Yates to their bullpen, we need a better lineup. We're not going to sign Alex Bregman. Hell, the Dodgers could sign Alex Bregman. The Dodgers could sign Pete Alonso. I know, they have Freddie Freeman. I know, Otani's the DH. I had a call that dropped that said Pete Alonso to the Yankees, and the Yankees definitely aren't. If he could play third base, that'd be swell. He's not like that. But man, it's kind of crazy to think that, like, a guy, the polar bear, who was Mr. Met, a guy who had done so much for the Mets, said he wanted to be a Met. We knew this free agency was coming. The offseason starts with an $800 million man that hasn't stepped foot in the batter's box for the team, and a guy that has hit countless home runs and been there for the team. He's left in the cold. 888-808-1019. And his teammates, which I said, you think this doesn't do something to the clubhouse? It does. The Mets are shifting. They're evolving. They're changing. Hold on, folks. Maybe it's for the better good. I've talked about that, too, with David Stearns. D. Stearns, the D is for destruction. D. Stearns, the D is for just literally destructing what you think of the Mets or what you thought of Billy Epler's Mets or Steve Cohen's Mets and saying, no, this is how we're going to reconstruct. You like what you saw last year? I brought McDonald's in. We had Grimace. We turned into a whole marketing campaign. It worked, didn't it? Oh My God, how do you think Oh My God hit that number one streaming digital Latin single? Yeah, I was behind that too. I don't know if he was actually behind that. But he was behind something that I noticed with the Mets. I said there were so many years with the Mets where it seemed like their GMs and their managers were just bystanders, were just passengers in the car as the car was crashing. Through the whole season, David Stearns and Carlos Mendoza tweaked and changed the team. If you weren't performing, you had to go. We have a standard. Jorge Lopez, you're never going to be back over here. Goodbye. Edwin Diaz, sticky stuff. All right, we'll shut you down. You need some time. You need whatever. We'll get you back to where we're going to go, and then we're going to believe in you and put you there. You know, they changed that bullpen. They added guys. They subtracted guys. They changed the lineup. They put Lindor at leadoff. Changed everything. So I think that those guys got to be trusted. I think that they have earned that. But, man, it just sucks to see that you have to trust them. And in that trust, it goes against Pete. It goes against one of your own. It goes against a guy that should be signed by now, should be ready to go. But he's floating out there, and he's trusting Scott Boras to get him a deal. He's trusting Scott Boras to go find some money. Ain't got to find money. You got the richest owner in the sport. He's got everything you need right there. 888-808-1019. I did have a call for Billy Wagner and CeCe and Ichiro. And like I said, it was supposed to be a happy day. And it was. We got three guys that played in New York, inducted to the Hall of Fame. And, of course, one guy, there's always got to be that one guy. And that's why I really don't rock with the Hall of Fame and the baseball writers. I think it's super corny and goofy that these pen pushers, they have the power where one guy, like, come on, Ichiro. Remember the itchy meter? Just Ichiro. Think about Ichiro coming over here if he came over here with the hits that he already had in Japan. Like, he played for a long time. He's still, like, out there coaching and playing. And when you talk baseball for Japan, like, he's such an icon. And somebody had to be the guy to say, no. Why? He's not unanimous. I think we all know he's unanimous, but somebody had to be the guy to say, no, not me. 97 or 99.7 first year. CeCe Sabathia, 86.8 first year. Billy Wagner, 82.5 in his 10th and final year. Carlos Beltran in his third year, 70.3%. He's going to get there. And there was some talk earlier about whether he's going to go in as a Met. He's still in the Mets organization, so potentially. Andrew Jones, 66.2. He's going to get there. They're just going to wait. That's another thing, too, yo. Do they huddle up? Do they have Microsoft Teams or a Slack channel where they're like, all right, eighth year for Andrew Jones. Which ones of you are going to cast your vote in year 9? We're going to get him a little bit closer. He'll be at 70% next year. And then in the 10th year, the rest of you join. And not the rest of you, but like enough of you join to put him over the threshold. It's so corny. It's just like, I don't know. Not the right way for these guys to have their lives changed. Like, to the happiness that CeCe showed. I saw Ryan Rucco in the background. I saw Tiki Barber's wife in the background. And I heard Tiki earlier today talking about how he wished he could be at the party at CeCe's house. I'm like, I know CeCe lives in Alpine. They live in Florham Park. I guess they're not that far from each other. But I saw CeCe's wife or Tiki's wife at CeCe's party. I'm like, that's cool. Like, don't you think that's cool? An all-time great Yankee, an all-time great Giant. Neither one from the area. One from Vallejo, California. The other one from Virginia. Both retired. You know, they live in North Jersey. And, you know, their wives hang out. And, like, they're that much of friends that they are at each other's houses. Crazy to think about. 888-808-1019. We're going to break it down. When we come back, I'm going to talk Aaron Glenn a little bit. We can continue talking about the Giants, the draft. I just honestly think you're crazy if you don't want Shedeur Sanders. After the terrible quarterback play you've had to watch with the Giants, you don't want Shedeur Sanders throwing the ball to Malik Nabers consistently. You don't want Brian Daboll to have his hand in developing Shedeur Sanders. You don't want prime time and the Sanders family and the star power that brings to New York to add some juice to the team that's going to probably win 3 to 5 games next year, but at least they'll have something to look forward to? I don't know. 888-808-1019. Keith McPherson on the Fan. Call me up. I'll be right back.
Your official station to talk Yankees. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app. Download it today.
Hey, yo. Still here. An hour and some change left. Keith McPherson on the Fan, talking sports, passing time through the night. On the Fan, 888-808-1019. We got to bring in the Aaron Glenn conversation. Now, I woke up this morning feeling a little under the weather, and I checked my emails, I checked my texts, I checked my social media, and I get the alert about Aaron Glenn, right? There is an Ian Rappaport tweet about a monumental day. Top target Aaron Glenn visits the Jets, and the goal is to keep him from leaving the building, sources say. The deal isn't done, and there are still some particulars to discuss, but if all goes well, he could end today as the head coach of the New York Giants. If not, the Saints will wait. The Saints will wait because it's snowing in New Orleans. They don't know what to do down there, not being so used to that. And I don't think he's running away from the Jets. It's been reported now for the last few days that they kind of had the inside track that he would like to take the job. And I'll start there. A big part of this Jets job is wanting the job. I don't know how many times I heard people on the Fan say, who would want to work for Woody? Who would want the job? And like, yeah, on one hand, it's like, oh man, you know, the things we read about Woody in The Athletic, what we've heard about, oh, you know, it's a tough job. You got to deal with Woody. It's an NFL gig in New York, New Jersey, the tri-state area. It's a coveted spot. Why did Aaron Rodgers want to come here? Because if you can actually come here and turn around the Jets, you will go down in history. You will be a legend. If you can just get them to the playoffs. Straight up. So Aaron Glenn, I've been following this guy for a little while, and I've been following the guys that do the Pivot podcast. Ryan Clark and that group, they were at Fanatics Fest. I kept trying to get them, but it was just impossible. Ryan Clark, Channing Crowder, and Fred Taylor. All former NFL players that most people know if you watch the NFL in the early 2000s, mid-2000s. But they have a great podcast, and they interview everyone. And 2 years ago, they interviewed Aaron Glenn. And I saw Jets Today posted the clip. And honestly, what prompted me to post it, and I got a lot of traction on it, I think it's partly because I have a good following. I have like 40,000 followers, so some things can just hit where a couple people see it, and it catches fire. But the reason that I even posted it was because I was seeing people like, oh no, the Jets are making the same mistake. Oh no, they're hiring a defensive coordinator. Oh no, this guy just got, ran over by the Commanders. Oh, we heard the same hype around Rob Saleh. The Jets are doing it again. What about Todd Bowles? What about... And I'm like, all right, so many people were pointing to Rob Saleh. This is the same mistake as hiring Rob Saleh. He didn't have any head coaching experience. So all I simply put was a clip from the Pivot podcast that we're about to play, and the caption or the text was, Aaron Glenn is not Rob Saleh. Listen to what he has to say here, and then I'll add some more things that I heard him say going back to listen to this podcast today. Go ahead, Fleeks.
Why jump right back into this?
Man, I'm going to tell you guys that I'm going to try to make this a quick story. So, and a lot of people don't even know this about me. Retired in 2008. Man, I owned 8 restaurants from 2008 to 2011. All right, you guys might, they're called Frenchies in Houston. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I actually owned 8 of them at one point. And they were doing well. Man, I actually had one in the Texan Stadium. All right, I had one right across the street, right from the Texas. So the players used to always come over and eat. Man, it was like a club on Sundays. All right, it was good and it was doing well. So, man, I'm at home, it's probably 2010. I'm at home and I'm watching SportsCenter or something like that. And I am cursing the TV out. I'm watching somebody play, and I'm just cursing the TV out. They should have done this. They should have done that. All right. And my wife's in there, and she's like, AG. I'm like, what? She's like, go coach.
Right.
I'm like, wow. What do you mean? She said, listen, it's cool you doing your restaurant thing, right? And you like that, but you love ball. You love ball. And man, when I tell you a weight was off my shoulders after that, because I was like most guys, you know, coming out, man, I have to be this big time businessman. I have to sit behind a desk wearing a suit and tie. And man, that wasn't me. You know, and I'm doing something that I liked, but I didn't love. Right. And I want to make sure if I do something, man, my heart got to be in it. Mm-hmm. And once she told me that, I jumped right in it, man. And at that point, this is a saying I always say, I didn't stick my toe in the water to see if it was cold. Yeah. I jumped right on in there.
Right.
Right. And I scouted, in-house scout with the Jets a couple of years. Then I went on the road. I was driving for hours, right, college scouting. Then I went right to being an assistant DB coach. I did my QC thing because I wanted to make sure I didn't miss one step. I wanted to start from the bottom. I told everybody I was there, don't treat me any different than anybody else, right? Because I want to understand everything there is about the scouting process. I want to know everything about being a QC. I want to know everything about being an assistant coach, all right, to a lead DB coach, to a defense coordinator right now, right? And I'm hoping to be a head coach at some point. So I didn't want to miss one step. So you can't tell me that I haven't seen it, just like with a player.
You got to love that. You got to love that. This is a guy who wanted to be a businessman, an entrepreneur, and was successful, right? With his Frenchie's restaurants, he said he had 8 of them that were doing well. But ultimately, he's a football guy. He's a football coach. Where his better half told him, AG, go coach. If you're going to be in the house yelling at the TV, if you're going to be in the house saying what they should have done, go yell and tell the players what they should have done. And so what he did where, I mean, he's from Houston. He's from Texas. He could have just stayed there. And he said, you know, the restaurant is right there, NRG Stadium. I even went on and watched the whole podcast back. He said he's a Texas guy. He retired with the Houston Texans because he's a Texan. He says he rides horses. He goes to the rodeo. He's Texas through and through. He went to Texas A&M with Dan Campbell. They're friends like that. They know each other for years. So you think he's not going to take some of that Dan Campbell with him? He is. But anyway, he opened up the restaurant and just left it to be a coach. And he didn't think because of his playing career, his status, where he was drafted, which Jets fans should know, he was drafted 12th overall in the first round. So he knows what it's like to be drafted by the Jets, to play for the Jets. He knows what it's like to go 1-15. He knows what it's like to go to the AFC Championship. He knows what it's like to be in this area. I went on to watch the rest of that podcast where they asked him about, why didn't you retire a Jet? Why'd you retire a Texan? And he said, you know, I love the Jets. I learned so much being in New York, being in that area. He said, my wife loves New York. As a married man myself, the whole happy wife, happy life thing is true. You can't have a happy life if your wife is upset. You can't have a happy life if your wife isn't cool with what you're doing. It's going to be, you're going to butt heads. It's going to be turmoil. You think his wife isn't itching to get out of Michigan and come to Jersey? You think she doesn't potentially want to bring their daughters, which I know he has one daughter. I think he might have two. I got to look up his Wikipedia. But you think she's not more inclined to move the family back to where when they were younger, they were together, and now bring the family over here, and he's the man? He's the head coach? I look at Aaron Glenn as a guy, like he said, he was here with the Jets already as a scout. He got it out the mud. He said he wanted to go through every different level so that you leave no stone unturned. You know everything about how the business is run. You know everything about being a player. Now you know everything about being a scout. He talked about driving to different colleges, being on the road, being an assistant defensive backs coach, being a secondary coach, being a defensive coordinator, and now trying to be a head coach. I don't understand the pushback. We've known for 2 years now, 2 seasons now, that Ben Johnson and Aaron Glenn would be the two coveted head coaching candidates as offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator. And when you look at Aaron Glenn versus Ben Johnson, Aaron Glenn has done way more than Ben Johnson. Aaron Glenn is a lot older and experienced than Ben Johnson. I don't know if you guys saw the video of Ben Johnson today in Chicago. It kind of gave me weird vibes. I mean, it is. I don't want to read too much into it. But he's 38 years old. And I don't know where he played. But he's been coaching for a while. He bounced around, you know, in the NFL. He kind of shot up from being a quality control coach, which Glenn just told you he did that too. I think he just got his opportunity going from a QC to a tight end coach to pass game coordinator to offensive coordinator all under the Lions. And he kind of took off very fast. I don't know how that's going to work with Caleb Williams, with Ben Johnson, with the Bears who have been struggling mightily for a while. But I feel like there's less pushback on Ben Johnson as there is on Aaron Glenn, a guy who's 52 years old versus 38 years old, a guy who played in the league versus a guy who didn't play in the league, a guy who played for the Jets versus a guy that didn't play, you know. I don't see what all the pushback was about today besides the fact that people think the Jets are making the same mistake again. That's called PTSD, trauma. That's called let the past go. Don't let the history scare you. Because if this guy wants the opportunity to be the head coach of the Jets, he's going to command respect. And he's already, there was a piece of audio I played last week. I think I had Connor play it. Maybe I'll send it to Fleegs and have Fleegs play it so I don't do it verbatim. But he was talking about how, and I looked at it as kind of like a wink, wink, nudge, nudge. I'm not Rob Saleh. Because the word on Rob Saleh that he was such a defensive mind, and he knew defense, but he didn't know enough about offense. He couldn't affect the offense. And what Glenn is telling you is, no, I'm a coach. I'm going to go sit with the offensive guys, the defensive guys, the special team guys. And I'm just like, this guy, if the Jets don't want him, I don't know how the Saints wouldn't want him or anybody else. 888-808-1019. So we'll open it up to Jets calls reaction. I'll get Fleeg's reaction first as a Jets fan. And actually, I didn't check your Twitter, Fleeg, because I know I was seeing WFAN. We have so many Jets fans here at WFAN. So, like, when I look at the, like, list that I made of WFAN Odyssey, I wake up in the morning, I'm like, everybody's just talking about it. Like, Rami, Connor, Paul, I'll let you take the mic and weigh in on Aaron Glenn and maybe any other potential head coaches that you have in mind for the Jets.
It's funny, I might have tweeted about it before I even left here this morning, because in what usually happens to Boomer and Geo, like, major news always drops at like 9:59 or 10:01 when they're wrapping up.
Yeah.
It happened to C-Mac yesterday. The Ian Rappaport tweet came at 4:59. So C-Mac and I are wrapping up. I look at my phone like, oh, of course this just happened and you didn't have a chance to talk about it.
Yeah.
Like, all the stuff you said about Aaron Glenn is true. Like, I have to make that clear first. He is a good candidate. Strong resume. My favorite thing about it is that he was a scout first. He has that background that you could add to coaching. That's all great. I don't think the Jets job is right for a first-timer, especially if you're also going to add a first-time GM on top of it.
There you
the
go.
Jets are a unique situation, so I don't like the move, but it's not that I don't like Aaron Glenn. I don't want to single out Aaron Glenn. It's that they did this entire process. They fired Saleh in October. Mm-hmm. They fired Douglas in November. They bring a search firm. They interview pretty much everybody in the NFL, and they land on most likely two guys who have not done the jobs they're going to have to do before. Newmark and especially Glenn, like Aaron Glenn on paper seems like such a strong candidate, but I think this Jets job presents unique challenges. I think it's something tough for somebody who hasn't done the job to walk in and handle. I think it's something that we saw clearly swallowed Robert Saleh whole.
Yeah.
Robert Saleh, who has all the attributes, like Glenn, of a good head coach, Todd Bowles, has been more successful after leaving the Jets. These are guys who maybe fit the profile, but the Jets job is so unique. It's such a disaster, and it's obviously a lot of it is Woody Johnson. It's not all Woody Johnson. There are other aspects that you have to deal with as well. You have to deal with the playoff drought. It shouldn't be attached to anybody taking the job, but we know, and this is another major obstacle with the Jets, the local media, not saying us necessarily, but I guess we're a part of it because we talk about them every day. The beat writers, the people that are in that building every day, they love Aaron Glenn now. They're so, you know, pro for him. Before he ever coaches a game with the Jets, he's going to be asked by one of those guys because they want to write the headline. He's going to be asked about the playoff drought, which Aaron Glenn has nothing to do with.
Mm-hmm.
He was successful when he was here as a player. He has nothing to do with the team since they've become the laughingstock of the league. He's going to have to answer for it, which he shouldn't have to. That's somewhere where I'd like somebody who has either had success elsewhere already or has experienced experience as a head coach can step in and kind of answer that. Again, it's not that I don't like Aaron Glenn. I really do. I think he'd be an excellent candidate somewhere else. I traditionally lean offense anyway because in the NFL, you have to have a good offense and probably a great quarterback to win.
Yeah.
It's easier to either get or develop that guy if you have the offensive-minded head coach. So I would have leaned offense anyway. The only time in my life the Jets hired an offensive head coach was a guy who I and every other Jets fan was screaming, please, Christopher
Adam
Johnson,
Gase?
You can't possibly think it's a good idea, yeah, to hire Adam Gase. And he did. Can't even blame Woody for that one. He was in the UK. So I wanted them to try that. It's not that Glenn is necessarily, you're right, because Saleh failed, because Bowles failed, he's not necessarily the same mistake for those reasons because it's unfair to hold what those guys did against him. I was just ready for this franchise to finally try something different. And in the formula, because again, Aaron Glenn could be different than all those guys. His resume is a little bit stronger than most of them. But I was ready to change up the formula because what they've done so far has not, actually, not only has it not worked, it's failed spectacularly in ways other franchises can't even imagine, hitting the depths that the Jets have sunk to.
Yeah.
I wanted to try something different. So it's not that I don't like Aaron Glenn. I really do. I
no,
just
but it
don't
scares
like
you to potentially
the whole parameters of the situation.
Make the same mistake again and lean into two guys who haven't done it before. It's funny, I was thinking about the Bill Parcells, like, yeah, they want me to make the dinner, but don't want me to buy the groceries. It's like, if you've gone, you know, to a restaurant multiple times, or if you've had somebody cook you, you know, someone cook a meal for you multiple times, it's their first time cooking the meal, and they screw up the meal, they burn the meal, it's bad. Like, you're going to lean towards, hey, I'd rather go with somebody who's done this a bunch of times. We all lean towards experience. But I just think that, you know, the same way the Jets situation is a unique situation that you're like, yo, I'm tired of these first-time guys screwing it up. Can we at least get some tried and proven guys in here that have a track record and experience? Because, one, the team has talent, right? It isn't like this is a team that's just losing and is a bottom roster and has no, they have talent. So you want somebody to come in as a GM, head coach that's done it before that knows how to, all right, let's, you know, get this together. But then also, because of the pressure of New York and the past history, you know, you're leaning towards that. But what I will say is I don't think Woody and the 33rd team are looking for that. I think that Woody and the 33rd team are looking to give someone the first-time opportunity that, one, they can give the opportunity to, but also they can help, they can talk to, they can consult with, they can maybe even push a certain way. And that might not sound good to a Jets fan. Hey, I don't want Woody to be able to influence anyone. Well, if you hire a strong enough candidate, whether it's Lance Newmark, which I think the only thing about Lance Newmark, two things. The success of the Commanders going from the number two overall pick to NFC Championship, he's in there building as the assistant general manager now. I'm sure there's a lot you could take from that. And then also pairing him with Aaron Glenn, he was in Detroit from 1998 to 2023. So there's the overlap with Aaron Glenn for at least 3 years together, where at least they know each other, 2021, 2022, 2023, where like they have a working relationship, they're familiar with each other. You don't want to put guys together that have never worked together at all and never done the job before. 888-808-1019. Steve in Stanford, we'll come to you next. We got to break it down. We'll get some Jets calls in here. Still talking about Pete Alonso. Still talking about what the New York Giants are going to do.
Still talking about the Hall of Fame. I think we're done talking about the Knicks. If anyone wants to weigh in on what happened with the Rangers, we can do that. This is my last hour coming up tonight. Keith McPherson on the Fan. I'll be right back.